Media TV. Right, it's been a busy weekend, and it'll be an even busier weekend coming up. This past week, we've seen the Wilder than Wild Wilder back in action with a repaired right hand, right bicep. We've seen some other fights as well we're going to discuss. Coming up, we have a huge card. The likes of O'Hara Davis, Derry Matthews, Bellew, Hay, and Boxing Ed. In the opposite corner, we have Adrian, the hashtag Greenland, voice of Boxing Casual. Near the Rhodes Johnson, joined by Terry, Dirt Dog Chapandama on our expert panel. Gentlemen, before we descend into the chaos that is on its way on March the 4th, let's talk Wilder. Washington, what do you think? Terry.
Just like to ask a quick question to the panel. Does anyone know where Fighting Ed's gone, just out of interest?
Yeah.
Shout out to the new presenter, Boxing Ed. Welcome to the show. Wilder, I'm very anti people coming into boxing from other sports. And number one, I find it quite disrespectful. Number two, you never really learn the fundamentals, it seems, because you had two guys in Washington and Wilder who you could see came from other sports. You know, Wilder has no footwork, has no fundamentals, unless he's scared of getting knocked out, then he seems to stick to his jab. But there was no jab, there was no footwork. And there's no precision in the punches. He just goes on the model of, if I throw enough punches and one of them hits you, you'll go down. Which is fine against Washington, who doesn't know what he's doing. But he couldn't have boxed that way against someone like a David Hay. Or, to be honest, even an Andy Ruiz Jr. would have given Wilder trouble that night. That's the scary thing. So,
what does Wilder do in the gym? In his training camp, what does he do? Because based on what we saw, I was confused in terms of boxing fundamentals. Terry, you coach. I support coaches sometimes. We all boxed a bit, moved around or whatever else. Some of us have had fights. Look, in a week, you can learn some basic technical level of competence to throw a jab correctly, to throw an overhand right and not end up spinning yourself around 720 degrees and end up straddling the ropes. What does Wilder do in his training, Cash Jr.?
Looks like he just hits the back, because that's all I can say. But it's simple. He got injured, and I think there's more injuries coming. When he's swinging those long air shots everywhere, I think he's going to pop a shoulder or something soon as well. Because I've been saying it for a long time. I've been saying Wilder by name, Wilder by nature. I mean, if you even go back to the Audley Harrison fight, it seems like when he's got a guy stunned, he just loses control. It's like he sees red, but he doesn't, he just loses control. It's like the whole, any form of fundamental boxing goes out of the window when he sees an opponent hurt. And even when he had Washington hurt there, you could see it. He maybe hurt himself. So it's crazy. Footwork, the jab. You guys said that. I remember somebody, I don't want to pin it on you. I remember somebody telling me that his jab had improved in this DeVern fight or whatever.
It was me. I put my hands up. It was me.
Was it you?
I confess.
Okay.
It was me. It was Ed.
I remember you talking to me about his jab being improved and all that. And I was like, nah. I mean, he was more controlled in that fight than I've ever seen him, to be honest. He's been more controlled then. But I think it's just a mental thing with him more than anything else. It's like he just, when he gets an opponent stunned, he's not a great finisher. Let's put it that way. He's not a Tyson where someone's stunned and they're getting cleaned out. You know what I mean? He's not that accurate. When he sees an opponent hurt, he just loses control.
He has no composure.
Yeah.
No composure.
Yeah. He loses control.
And combine no composure with awful technique, awful feet, and then you get what we saw on Saturday night. Adrian, what does this mean for the landscape of heavyweight boxing and the potential unification of titles in the next 12 to 18 months?
It doesn't really change from what we said before. In all honesty, I think his lack of technique, it looked like it improved a bit, but the fact it hasn't or it has is neither here nor there. He's still at the top of the tree, and he's at the top of the tree for now, in theory, and I think he's still. Got enough to trouble your likes of Josh. I'm not sure about Fury, what he's doing, but Wilder's still there. And I think that Wilder's still, he's still a good fighter. I mean, he's more, he's in a way more mobile than Josh. His footwork's worse, but he's more mobile than Josh. So that could cause some problems.
Yeah. He's naturally faster across the ground than Joshua, but he's technically very poor, so he's in the wrong position of balance.
Exactly.
He's got more agility than
so that's what I think. That's what I think. If you're talking about the landscape, and it seems like that's the, for now anyway, that's where the big unification fight is, unless someone else kind of throws a spanner in the works. So all going well, if those two fight, I think you couldn't really easily call it. People think they could, like Josh will bang him out, but Josh hasn't really fought anyone like that. So
Josh was kind of stiff up body, so he could get caught.
So the landscape remains.
When you say landscape, what do you think about Dominic? Not about it's like Brazil. Similar to Dillian White got knocked out by Joshua, but has come back with a big win. What are your thoughts on that, Terry?
Listen, Brazil's the toughest heavyweight out there after Amin Mansour, as far as I'm concerned.
What does tough mean? Tough? What do you mean?
Can suck up blows.
Just tough. Like, you know, there's certain people you meet in life, and even if you know you could take them in a fight, what you know is going to take something out of you.
Hang on. After Mansour, didn't Brazil beat Mansour and break your jaw in the process?
No. So he beat Mansour, and Mansour couldn't come out because of a split tongue, which required 20 stitches, I think. But before that, he just took an absolute hiding from Mansour, who gave Washington an absolute hiding as well on the way to a split draw.
Washington is rubbish. And just to make a point as well, Junior, didn't you once rate Washington, if we, you know, as we're going back, throwback Thursday, past indiscretions?
What?
I remember you once saying you were a fan of Washington. But we move on. Sorry, Terry, continue.
So for me, you know, I watched the Ugonna fight. It was meant to be a coming up party for Izu, you know, signed to Al Haymon, you know, big things were expected. Physically looked the part, you know, early part of the fight, you're watching him singles, doubles, triples on the jab, nice. But Brazil's that person who, he's big enough that if he hits you, it has an effect. And he hit Ugonna, that affected him for the rest of the fight, and then after that, it was just whoever lands the right shot was always going to end it. That was never.
I think Ugonna was tired. He's very reckless when he attacks. So he's there to be hit when he attacks, and that was his problem. So you know, he could have fought the fight at a slower pace.
Remind me, what round did it finish? Was it the sixth or the fourth?
Fifth. Pretty sure it's the fifth.
So he was tired by then. Yeah. He was tired by the fifth.
Yeah, he's quite muscular. They did notice he's quite muscular, so I think and he was boxing he's throwing quite a lot of sharp hard combinations, so a lot of basic combination power shots, so I think it took his energy. I think he fought in a way where his movement was quite frantic at times as well, so even though it's not the biggest heavyweight, there's a lot in those 4 or 5 rounds, there's a lot of movement for heavyweight, a lot of power shots thrown, excellent body shots thrown, but he was when finishing his combinations, his head was often in the wrong place. So it's funny because when I saw it, I don't know what you thought, Terry or Junior, but when I saw it, I thought with the right coach, he could be a lot more dangerous.
Well,
if
you remember,
the right coach, he'd be very good.
I'll watch both of those guys again. I think let's eliminate any talk of world titles for those guys, but they can be an entertaining fight. So you can see those guys jumping in with an Amin Mansour or Gerald Washington and just having a terror.
Right.
And you know, that some of these fights need to be entertaining.
If you remember, on previous podcasts, I actually said Ugonna was one to watch for this year. And I did. I hold my hands up. No, I did. I said he was one to watch.
The curse of the roads.
but if you look at the first couple of rounds, he was boxing really well. Like you said, Terry, he came out with a good jab and a body shot. So I was very impressed with his work to the body. But he got hurt. Brazil hurt him, and that changed the dimension of the fight. He turned into Amir Khan. He thought, yeah. And he gave Brazil a chance. If he carried on boxing instead of fighting, you know, it would have been a different story, I think. You know, he was out. He obviously had the better technique, but Brazil had the bigger heart.
I think it was one of the most entertaining fights I've seen in a long time.
Oh, it was, yeah.
But it didn't need to be, because Ugonna didn't need to fight like that. He could have won that quite easily by boxing and coming in and out of the scrap when he needs to get in and out of it, because I was surprised when he got knocked. I think he got knocked down through fatigue rather than anything else. Because
he took a knee, if you remember.
The shots weren't clean.
The first one was a knee, the second one was just...
That's what I'm saying. They weren't clean chinners. And I feel like Brazil didn't really look like he was going to win it. I thought he was going to lose. So I think it was sheer fitness. I don't know if the occasion got the better of him, but it was very entertaining.
So I have a theory on this. I think everyone's been in such a rush to build heavyweights for the post-Klitschko era that these guys have all avoided each other. They've all avoided coming up the traditional way. So if you look at Larry Holmes, for example, he came up as Muhammad Ali's sparring partner. I think he did rounds with George Foreman prior to that and some work with Joe Frazier. So by the time Holmes says, I'm going to be a pro, he's seasoned and he's mastered ring craft because he's had to survive against some dangerous fighters. Who's a going of maybe a few rounds of Parker, but who's he really
He's been in Klitschko camp. It's kind of true what Terry's saying.
It's kind of true because I think when you talk about the landscape, it's almost like everyone's seeing the Josh and the Wilder thing and they genuinely in their heads believe we can do it and they're just trying to rush as soon as they can to the gold mine. That's what it is. And they're not really trying... No one's building. Dylan White, no one's building, really. They're not building. They're just trying to get there.
I don't know. Look, let's see. I think you are, if you're fighting Brazil, that is a building fight, isn't it? No.
But there's ring craft. So if you go back to the old heavyweights, as soon as you're tired, then that's where ring craft comes in. That's where you're not trying to fight the guy. You're trying to nullify him while you're getting
I take your point and you're correct here because we saw someone that... After they'd kind of shot their load, he was then very, he looked very inexperienced in there.
Because he's used to bombing people out.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, lack of ring craft, lack of defensive nous. Agree, and also the heart hadn't been tested properly before. It appeared because he took a knee. You know, he took a knee when he could have held.
If you saw his face at the end of the fight, he couldn't believe that he lost the fight. Because he knew that this was in the script, he was meant to win. He saw the Josh Brazil fight. He used the up and coming guy.
He saw the state of Brazil's face.
He was fucking the straight right. He was meant to. Obviously, from this fight, it would have positioned him in a very strong place. I don't know which belt to go for, but he could have been a nice place to go for a belt.
He's highly rapid.
Now he's kind of in the middle ground. Now he's got to rebuild again. So.
Is that a bad thing?
Any thoughts on the action we saw in the UK this past Saturday? Luke Campbell, a very, very good performance. Looks like he's finding his rhythm with Rubio, and he could be by the end of this year challenging for world honours. Junior?
Nah. So Campbell's You have to look at these things for what they are. The guys that they're matching him with are tailor-made for him. He's got the height advantage, which means he doesn't have to come forward. So he just sits on the back foot as a southpaw. And you know he's looking for that counter left uppercut now. That's what he's really looking for. But once you get in with guys who, A, have ring craft, and B, have similar attributes to you, I don't think Luke Campbell's that guy. I think when it gets into the trenches, he'll be found wanting again.
Does he fight Mendy again?
He stays well away from Mikey Garcia, doesn't he? Eddie Herbert's talking that up, but I don't see that happening. I just think he needs to build him. Like Luke Campbell's been in a bit of a rush. I think he seemed to be in a race with AJ, but he's not going to win that race. That race is already won. So he just needs to concentrate.
Luke Campbell's he's not young. He's 30 years old or so. So he hasn't got that much longer in the sport. So he needs to get to the top level fairly soon and try and stay there for 2-3 years. Sometimes we forget. We think Luke Campbell's some 22-year-old just come out of the Olympic. You know, he's not that young.
Yeah, he looks 22.
That's the problem. He looks young.
It's hard for him.
He's got a touch of the Amir Khan's about him in terms of style.
I was just about to say that. He does fight. Used to fight very, very much like an amateur. Very clean, crisp. I think Mendy, he got found out in terms of durability, but he does kind of have the amateur S star where does it transition to the top of the tree in that division? I'm not really too sure.
So Mendy was, I don't think it was just durability, I think it was technique as well. It was from the last punch in exchange, it was leaving his head high up, and as a southpaw being susceptible to the left hook. I think there were just some basics southpaw defensive skills that he didn't seem to have, and understand how to defend himself as a taller man. If you haven't got the distance on someone, you know, if you haven't got them at range, and you're crazy at having to defend yourself. And I imagine that's what. Well, there's two things. It's like Amir Khan, isn't it? Teach him to just to stay the hell away, as in run, or when you are inside, learn some defensive skills. I think Virgil Hunter, for Amir Khan's example, is trying to teach him a bit of both. Mm. But I don't think anyone's too convinced by the defensive skills, by the guard, you know, the defence is in tight. So Amir Khan's at his best when he's moving, when he's got his distance. Should we stop wasting time now and get straight into it? March 4th, get down to business.
We're not going to discuss Noble versus Coyle?
I think that needs a touch. That needs a touch. It does need a touch.
Do you? Okay. What do you have to say about that? Hashtag.
Well, you know, you guys are, as I like to call you guys, you're all Miguelitos in one form or another. You know, you spend time around Miguel's. A lot of good noise had been coming out of Miguel's about what Rakeem Noble was able to do. And what worried me, and I've got a lot of time for Rakeem, I think he's a good guy, but I was concerned that Tommy Coyle is the bottom tier of televised fighters, and Rakeem Noble is the top tier of a small hall fighter. So the gap between the two was huge. I don't even think if he'd given Noble a full camp, he could have done anything to win that fight, because he got knocked out by... he dipped to his left. He didn't even put anything in the way and just caught the right hand coming in.
No, but Terry caused the damage. You say that, but his hands were actually up. That's the worrying thing about the knockdown or the knockout. His hands were up, but they were by his chin, but they weren't on his... It was weird. He had his guard, but it just went straight through.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, you've heard me say this before. Don't go anywhere where you haven't put a grenade. Or, you know, I mean, you've got to put your RPGs somewhere, yeah, to keep the opponent on his back. You can't just step to the left and the guy's just there like, I'm just going to throw this right hand unchallenged. What are these guys learning in gyms? And it's not even a Rakeem Noble thing. It's a general thing where you're seeing British boxers losing fights and you're like, but these are things you would have learned if you just spent enough time in the amateurs, because amateur coaches wouldn't let you fight if you couldn't do the basics, like jab if you go to the left.
I think with the slipping and that sort of style and ability in boxing, I think the issue is, one of the issues, and maybe you've got a point here, there's a lack of depth there. A lot of schools or sections or coaches or teams of boxers and coaches and managers think that they're producing stylistic boxers. If you look at the Ingles, you know, the likes of the Witters, the Brooks, you know, there was a real depth to developing that level of skill. A real, real depth. This is kids raised from a very young age being trained in that manner. They boxed each other. They've been at it up there in Sheffield, you know, so they can really do it on fight night. What you have now is people that might have had 12 amateur fights. They've decided to go pro. They have a manager that tells them they're slick and beautiful, and they've beaten up, you know, the local, the guy in the gym who sweeps up a few times, and they truly believe that they have this skill set. So it's almost autopilot. They convince themselves they can use it in a fight, in a pragmatic sense, and they can't. You know, that's not, they don't have the depth of skill set to meet anyone in the ring and execute that kind of slips, that kind of movement. I mean, look at Kell Brook, even against Golovkin. You know, it's an deeply ingrained ability he has to move and fight in a certain manner, you know. So I think it's about depth, and unfortunately for Rakeem Noble, that kind of ability to slip and move in that way and always hypnotise the your opponent is something he probably believes he had, but he doesn't.
I think he doesn't. I think that transition, it's like we said, that transition between the Dove Box Promotions, York Hall kind of Goodwin shows and the main Eddie shows, there's clearly a gulf there. The ironic thing, when I was watching it, I saw that Rakeem actually fractured his eye socket somehow. I'm not sure how, but he was in hospital, so he fractured his eye socket. But what I saw is Rakeem was the sharper boxer with his jab and with the 1-2s when he threw them. So he looked like the slicker boxer. But Coyle just threw all I saw from him was the overhand rights. That's all I personally saw. He might have thrown a jab, but I didn't see it. But Rakeem had no power no visible power of his shots. So I don't really get why his coaches, if that was the case, put him into that fight, thinking he was really going to win and not get hurt. It didn't make any sense.
You know what? Well, so from just the bits and pieces I picked up, they thought they'd seen enough in Coyle to say this guy's on the way down. And they'd seen enough in Noble to say this kid's on the way up. And they actually thought Rakim's fitness would be the telling factor as the fight wore on. But the thing about Noble is
why did they think that?
Boxing people. This is what was being said.
He's known to be a very fit, almost like a footballer who's super fit but can't run with a ball with their feet.
I don't care how much Pilates you do, because Ryan Giggs used to do it. No, and he knows how to feel. Listen, these guys are getting busy in hell, mate. They're running in the snow, mate. They, you know what I mean? They're going gym, and Tommy Cole's still selling toys for a pound of Luke Campbell, even though they won't admit it anymore. You're not fitter than them. Like, you're not. Like, don't. It's the biggest myth in the world when you're in the boxing gym and doing amazing things on the pads, going for crazy runs, and thinking your opponent is not doing the same thing. It's nonsense. They are.
And this is what I mean. So the worrying thing is, I don't see how you close that gap between the small hall guys and the televised guys. I don't know how you close that gap in terms of ability to execute under pressure, physical capability to last the distance in that environment, and actually what the hell you do when you're in the ring against experienced people who have a point to prove. Unlike your small hall guys where you're fighting Hungarian cab drivers who are happy for the 1,500 quid.
I feel like, obviously we're going to lead on to it, I'm sure, but I feel like Eddie is trying his best now with the next gen or the new gen, whatever he's trying to do. I feel like he's trying to kind of do that with his younger fighters. I think after his show with the younger guys at the O2, he kind of found out, sort of Ben Hall getting found out against Carson Jones, for example. I think now he's trying to kind of build a middle stage between these guys, the young prospects coming up, but they're not maybe ready for the top yet. So let me get this next gen show going and transition.
I don't think models too much about their readiness for top. I think it's about an investment thing. And you know, he can't be putting these guys on shows at Wembley or the O2 Arena.
Possibly, but
it doesn't justify an investment. Yet.
Possibly, so but I think it will sell out.
He can still make a profit. And he can weed out, you know, who's actually got the talent and go forward.
In theory, from the business sense of things, yeah, 100%. But I think within that model, there's always going to be one or two that the model will actually benefit them. Because I think Ahara Davis was doing the York Hall stuff. He's kind of someone who's done it, but it worked. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, he's come from Repton, etc. So he wasn't a shabby amateur, but...
No. Remember, Davis has been sparring pros since he started in the amateurs.
Yeah, may have a gym. He's been doing it, so... But still, he still kind of transitioned through that, but he did it the right way.
Let me give... I think the good example, when we say the right, is little... well, not so little anymore, Isaac Dubbo. And, I mean, they have their saying, don't they? They say they're battle-tested, war-tested. And that's before you turn pro. And I think that's to your point, Harry. You know, you've got to be battle-tested. Before you go to war, have you been in a battle before? Have you been there in Belfast or everywhere else, or even with battle of getting busy with Carl Frampton? With King Kamas, have you done it? You know, you've got to be battle tested. You know, receiving the big shots, having to slip big shots, put your guard up, it can't be something new to you when you get in the boxing ring. No, I don't think it's acceptable, really. But, you know, go on. One final point for you.
I was going to say, move on. My key message is that I think, as people who move around in boxing circles, we need to keep driving this message forward. Let's stop being fans of people because we hear the hype. Let's actually ask ourselves, of these boxers, how many are really well-schooled and how many of these guys are really seasoned? And then that number suddenly starts to shrink very quickly.
Agreed. And I think we could end that point on one of your comments, Terry, that you often make, is that if you speak to any heavyweight in London, they'll say they can't get any sparring. Because no heavyweight is sparring in London. Every heavyweight in London says that. Moving on. March the 4th. Big night. The exciting night. Liverpool versus London. There's so much in the media at the moment. Let's try and give an alternative or some insightful views on, first of all, the chief supporting fight in the undercard, Ahara Davis, Derry Matthews. Hashtag, your thoughts.
My thoughts on the fight, my thoughts on the press conference, my thoughts on Ahara. Which one?
All three, as long as they're quick and concise, mate.
I'll start with Ahara. Ahara's, he turned out at the press conference yesterday, and he came with a frame of mind where he just didn't give a damn. He just didn't give a damn. I think he confused everyone with his kind of persona. I haven't seen that from him since he used to give the chat when he was fighting at York Hall and stuff. I've seen him back then. He used to have the mouth. He kind of calmed down under Eddie at the start, and now he's just back. I like the confidence. I like Ahara Davis. I like everything he represents. And the kid can fight as well. So I think he's going to be very entertaining, and I think he's going to win the fight convincingly, in my opinion. But I love it, man. It's good for the show. And yeah, man. Ahara, I've got a lot of time for him.
Junior?
Yeah, I echo that, really. I found it very entertaining. I found Ahara very entertaining. And it just made me really want to watch the fight, you know. The press conference, the crowd in Liverpool, how he kind of got under their skin as well. And Derry Matthews did a wonderful job of rallying the crowd as well. I just hope the fight lives up to that kind of hype, the build-up, because it's been... I hope we get another Chisora White situation where we get a fight.
To be fair, we don't really see Derry Matthews in boring fights, do we? So I'm sure he'll do his part.
Exactly. So, yeah, hopefully we get a scrap that matches the press conference and the build-up and everything else. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Definitely. Terry, your insights?
I always go back to December 2012, Christmas Day, and watching a group of kids. I think it was Ahara Davis, Anthony Yard, little Junior Benjamin, and Big Junior, all training at Chisora's gym on Christmas Day. And you watch these kids as amateurs and you went, these guys are doing something no one else is doing right now. And I kept my eye on them since then. I've kept my eye on them. I'm relatively close to those guys because, you know, they were in the amateur scene when I was, so it was, you know, fortuitous. So when I see how far O'Hara's come, because I remember when people didn't want Ahara Davis in boxing, you know, the guys like Frank Warren, we're like, nah, we don't want this guy. He's more trouble than he's worth. So to see the fact that actually, not only has he done it, but as soon as Eddie gave him a chance, Ahara took that chance and turned it into something lucrative. I'm happy for him. You know, look, he's testing himself. You know, it wasn't that long ago Derry Matthews was fighting Luke Campbell, so that shows you how quickly Ahara Davis has come up the ranks. I wish the kid all the best. I have nothing bad to say about him. I think he's being himself. You know, he's a guy who will always be quick to reach for the grenades as soon as he can. As soon as he feels under attack, he'll reach for the grenades. I think he'll mellow as he gets older, but he's a young man, 24, 25. You learn by making mistakes.
I don't agree with all you guys. I think one point I'll challenge there is that I think it was you, Adrian, or Junior, that said he saw, it was good to see the confidence from him. I think you actually saw something more interesting than that. I think he saw someone walk into an environment that he couldn't prepare for, was not prepared for, but knew was going to test him emotionally. And I think he saw someone show bravery and take on that environment and grow in confidence throughout the process of that emotional encounter with the fans, with Derry Matthews. I think if you know, kind of stare danger in the face and say, you know, and take it on. And what I think is good there is two things. Number one, that we know the guy is tough. We know he's not scared. Or someone, well, everyone feels fear at some time. We know someone is willing to face his fears. And I think he's done that already, which is good. And I think that kind of emotional journey you need to go on before a fight, as any of you like who have fought before, I have done the business, gym legend, anyway. That emotional journey you go on before a serious fight, I think he's been through that already now, and he's done it via the press conferences. So I expect to see a very, you know, calculated, precise, vindictive Ahara Davis on fight night.
I really
wish him all the best.
Like what you said, it would be very easy for him to adopt the AJ model and just be a kind of quiet, reserved. because he's not, he's admitted himself with the stutter and stuff like that, he's not the naturally the most confident person foundationally, but he's kind of grown with confidence. But he could easily have just gone down the route of just chilling, sitting there, being very neutral, almost very boring with the press conferences. But he's kind of gone for a different angle. He's rolled the dice a bit with it, and it could not work. I feel like I saw the Eddie Hearn interview afterwards and stuff like that. And he was saying, sort of like, I just wanted Hara to sit down kind of thing. But I don't know, I felt like Eddie's comments, I don't know if you guys saw that as well, but I felt like some of Eddie's comments were a bit, it's his fighter at the end of the day. And I feel like he didn't really back him enough. I feel like if he's wrong, be strong and wrong. And just say, look, yeah, Ahara's, he's up for it, whatever. But he kind of turned his back. Because he made one point. He said one thing. He said one thing and he was like, if Ahara goes out and... He obviously, he was trending, etc. So he's buzzing off that matchroom, Eddie. Do you know what I mean? But then he said... If he loses, it will look like a bit of a bellend. And I felt like, oh, I don't know, that's your fight. Are you really, is that really on to say that?
I think he was just gassed by the Liverpool crowd, the cheer that he got.
I think Eddie was more thinking about my next show in Liverpool. Yeah. I'm gonna kind of get a good word in for the fans. I felt like that. I didn't really like that too much. If that was my fight,
I think if we're in that kind of environment, I think that kind of commentary kind of shows exposes a few things, and I think. The best way to sum it up is David Haye's comments that he heard in that first press conference. I think, you know, I think David Haye, you know, apples and pears, I think he said it best, you know, and I just, Ahara, he knows his own mind, which is good. And I think in life sometimes, and what he's done for his boxing is, people may not necessarily want to support you, but through his ability and his hard work, he commands respect, right? You know, he commands that respect and they have to treat him, pay him properly and pay him a certain way. And it's a long may it continue. And so, and to be honest, same for the likes of Derry Matthews. You know, through being a hard man and being a tough fighter and being willing to fight anyone, anywhere, you know, he's commanded the respect that he's got. So, you know, fair play to both of them. And, you know, all said and done, I hope they have a very, very good fight, make some good money for himself and shake hands afterwards.
But I think the problem with yesterday is, how are you going to get sponsors into boxing? How are you really going to make boxing lucrative for the fighters when it's all a bit of a crapshoot? There seemed to be no real structure to that, where it was like freeform jazz, wasn't it? As soon as someone set the tone, that was it.
Control. I mean, how did before the press conference started, how was Ahara out there in his suit arguing with the crowd? Eddie Hearn didn't have a jacket on yet, you know.
That's a good point, though, which Terry just made, because it's something which I've discussed with my boxing friends, my boxing colleagues, and it's almost like, okay, Josh, he's marketable, etc. Like, the Josh thing's done, we know what it is. With some of these smaller guys, in terms of putting up the local construction guy as their sponsor, in terms of getting kind of real tangible sponsors, how... It's almost it's a chicken and egg. It's like Ahara has to behave like that and trend on Twitter to make some noise so people can know his name. But why can't these guys get good sponsorship? But then they have to perform that act to get it almost, or to make noise.
I don't know. I think it's different. I think that's a different topic. I think it's a deep topic. You know, and I think we must also say why should they be sponsored?
No, wait. It's not so much that. It's you look at sports like rugby, and you can have the Six Nations and you'll have O2 backing that. Because deep down, O2 know you're not really going to get much negative publicity at a rugby game or a press conference. It's all very structured. It's all very ordered. Which doesn't mean it's boring, but it gives sponsors certainty, which puts money into the sport. Now, I'd like to see shows like Frank Warren and you've got Mercedes-Benz, you know, perhaps sponsoring something or involved or engaged, as opposed to, you know, we kind of have lower tier brands involved in boxing, you know, StubHub. Who really cares about StubHub? Let's be honest, no one does. The only person I've seen really crack it is Anthony Yard, because he's kept off the grid pretty much and secured his Maxi Muscle deal. And it, from what I'm hearing, it seems to be a pretty good deal for him as well.
Yeah, I think we know we're getting into maybe there's more of a social discussion here. That we need to have
over wings, perhaps.
Perhaps with some wings, you know. Perhaps, you know, but
I mean, it's important that if you do have the wings, that you save some wings for the next day.
A real man finishes wings. A real man eats all his wings at once. I'm just asking Paulie Malignaggi and the pizza, the pepperoni, mate. Eat it all in one sitting. And let's get on to Paulie Eggington. You know, is this an exhibition fight? You know, is it going to be enjoyable? Guys, thoughts, Junior?
Yeah, well, you know, I like to hear from Paulie Malignaggi. I like to see if he's still got anything left. So he's got a bit of a British following as well. A lot of people generally like to hear from him and respect his boxing opinion. But let's see if he's still got any boxing ability.
A bit of a British following. Paulie's loved and respected in this country. Like, you know, between him and Shannon Briggs,
exactly.
You know, they could both run for Prime Minister next time
around. Exactly. So to get these guys over and to see... It'd be nice to see if Paulie can, Paulie can show some of his old skills, some of his old self, really. It'd be nice to see that. With Eggington, it's a chance for him to be in the ring with a legend, really. You know, one of the boxing, you know, get a scalp on his name, on his resume, possibly. So, the fans, we can't really lose out here, you know.
Yep. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, Paulie wins on points. Paulie wins on points for me. That's what I'm going for. I don't think Sam Eggington's the smartest fighter in the world, you know, and I think he's going to get exposed for his lack of boxing brain in this fight. He thinks he can just bang out an old Paulie Malignaggi, washed up Paulie Malignaggi. And I don't think that's going to happen. I think Paulie's just going to keep him at range. He's just going to throw. You know what Paulie does? Paulie hasn't got the power shots. Paulie throws a lot of punches. And I think he's going to outpoint him.
Terry, worth your comments?
It'll be a good yardstick fight for Eggington. He seems to be a match on Pep Project at the moment. So, you know, he'll always get a push. You know, but ultimately, they're just delaying the inevitable fight with Bradley Skeet, aren't they? Because I think they realise they're not probably ready for that, which would then mean they must see something in Malignaggi's decline that says he's ready now. I think Paulie might old man him in this ring, just use ring craft and experience to slow him down, you know, manoeuvre him around the ring, have the fight happen when and where he wants it to. And then we'll see if Eggington can adapt to that.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. It all makes sense. Could be an interesting fight if Paulie stands and fights. I think that will make it interesting. Or if Paulie gets tired. But it'll be a good test. I just thought the main event. Hey, Bradley. Now, look, I don't want your diatribes. I've been getting it on WhatsApp all week from all of you, right? What I want from each of you is one comment on the emotion or psychology of the fight, and one comment on how technically it will go down and happen on the night. Adrian, the hashtag Greenland. Kickoff.
Emotionally, I think that David Haye's rattled. I think that he's been taken out of his comfort zone. For the first time, I've probably seen it like that from David. He's usually cool, calm, collected, a bit cheesy, a bit cocky. But at the press conference yesterday, I saw something that I haven't really seen. I've seen sort of anger, I've seen needle, but he lost it.
He did. I think there were some racial slurs directed at him. So
possibly, I didn't hear them. I didn't hear them, so I can't even comment because I didn't hear them. If I heard them, then I would. But it possibly was the case. Can't speak for that. But he was rattled, and I'm sure in a boxing environment, it's probably not the first time he's heard something like that. If that did happen, but yeah, emotionally, I didn't like what I saw from him. In terms of control and composure, for one, not that throwing a table across the room displays composure, but this was different. In terms of the fight and how it plays out, I think Tony's going to try and evade him for the first four rounds, as much as possible. And I think after that, I think Haye might catch him in the web after the evasion. I think that's Bellew's strategy to essentially not run, but essentially avoid the power shots. But I don't really see Tony Bellew running around the ring. I don't really think he's got that in him. So I just think he's he probably will get found out after that. A part of me is kind of going towards Bellew doing something, but I'm not sure I can realistically see it happening.
Sorry, I need to compose myself. But
well, you don't see nothing in Bellew.
What? Listen, Bellew is an easier fight than Jagger Jab for Hay. Seriously, I'm being honest. I think Mark Domori beats Bellew. I think all of them guys beat Bellew, man. To be honest, yeah, I'm happy. I'm seeing the old David Hay come back. I saw it in the last press conference when he cussed out Eddie Hearn. I've seen it now.
That was different. No, but the way he went at Eddie was different.
Yeah, I get you. But it's back. And I'm going to elaborate more. Yeah? But, you know, we saw it with Audley Harrison. David Hay, when he's focused like this, yeah, when he's angry like this, you get what he says. He says he's going to knock him out in two. So I'm going for that. That's my prediction. He's going to knock Billy out in two. You said it. You see it before with Harrison. He said, look, man, this guy's not on my level. He's going to be as one-sided as... And he got in trouble for those comments. And he's getting in trouble for saying that Bellew might get hurt in this thing as well. But I can only see it going that way, you know. I'm happy. I've been on David Hayes' back a bit, man. But I've been one of his biggest fans down the years. You know, he's been one of my favourite fighters, man. But recently, you know, with the fight, pullouts of the Fury fight and the rest of it, it's kind of, and the Klitschko performance, it was kind of hard to, like, you know, it was just hard to support him after those kind of, you know, performances. But I'm happy to see him back. I'm happy to see that fire in him. I'm happy after that I was happy to see that anger. I was happy because I know what's going to happen now. The anger's going to come out in the ring.
He physically deliver that can he convert that anger into a physical performance?
You're going to see it. Yeah, I'm going to tell you now. Yeah, it's going to be easier than Jagger Jab. It's going to be easier than Domori. It's going to be easier than that for him, man. Seriously.
Terry?
So emotionally, not that worried because outbursts happen. I don't think it has any bearing on the fight. These are both men in their mid-30s now who've been through it all so many times that the routine is nailed. So once they get back into that routine, back in the gym, back around the people they know, clear heads again. So a lot of people try and find things in press conferences that don't exist. It's childish, in fact. You know. So what it was a little outburst. It's you got to vent, focus. But like Junior said, I think what it did is it reminded people who David Hay actually is. You know, you can see the smiley guy on Celebrity. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. You can see all of that stuff. Deep down, this is the guy who likes to hurt people. I'll go back to the days of Mick Carney, God rest his soul. And whenever you ask him about David, he said two things consistently over the years. One, David likes to fight. Number two, he loves hurting people. Now, you factor those two things in, and you're in against a guy who really is smaller than you, who's not as strong as you, not as fast as you, not as powerful as you. Not only that, not as powerful as the people you've been in the ring with. He has nothing to worry about from Tony Bellew. If I was Bellew, I'd be worried about getting hit by David Hay in 10-ounce gloves. I'd be very, very worried because I've seen what he can do in 16th and it's not pleasant.
You know, absolutely. I think, so, 2 points. I think from a kind of a psychological, emotional side of things, I think that David Hay is irritable. You know, he's impatient, he's snappy, snarly around his fight time. And I think it's the right emotion you'd want to see from him. You know, he's ready to do some damage. I think Bellew emotionally is, you know, he's as confident as he can be, you know, or confident as, you know, he's been coached to be up to this point. He'd have been working hard on his game plan. I don't think, and he's going to, you know, he has to kind of stay calm and composed in that mind frame because his approach and chance of doing well in this fight is by executing on the game plan. So I'm expecting a composed Bellew, and David Hay, like I said, Bellew's face irritates him, so he's starting to get annoyed and wants to knock him out as soon as possible. On fight night, what I think technically your house can go down. I think what you will see from Bellew is whatever the game plan is, it's going to be a very exaggerated game plan. So when I say exaggerated, I mean it will be a very exaggerated maybe attempt to roll under David's left hook and exaggerate movement away from the right hand. So you'll see a really, really, really exaggerated movement away from the right hand. Maybe, you know, quick step back, exaggerated movement to the belly's right. I think that's what we'll see. In terms of David, I think, he's gonna probably put a hurting on belly. You know, start with a stiff jab. Belly may try and be fast and slip one early and get a shot off. That might be a tactic, and in doing that, he'll probably receive a very hard punch. And, you know, I think the fight will most definitely be over within 3 rounds. Most probably 2.
Can I just touch on, Ed, can I just touch on one point?
Hold on. Who are you going for first? You said 3 rounds, 2 rounds. Who are you picking? Hay or Belly? Are you sitting on the fence?
No, I thought David Hay
will win. Okay, wow. Finally got a prediction.
No, but I think if it was me, and I was asked this question yesterday, what tactic would I give Bellew? I'd actually promote a strategy of blitzkrieg. I'd literally, as soon as the bell goes, I'd have a minute where I just went after David Hay.
That's so sad.
That's your only option. You're not outboxing him. He's too quick. You haven't got the arms to outbox him. You may as well go in and go, do you know what? I'm going to have a minute where I make you think this is how it's going to be for the next 3 or 4 rounds. And let's see how you cope with me coming after you. Just to get that psychological edge. Without that, it'll be a very swift finish.
But staying on the psychological element of it, I think one major disadvantage that Tony Bellew's got right now, outside of boxing, outside of what he's done, could be Dave Culver. Because... jokes aside, there's two things that I saw from the weekend to yesterday. The first thing that I saw was after the fight, when McDonald lost, he snapped. I don't know if you guys saw, but he almost snapped at the camera.
He had his Kevin Keegan moment.
He didn't play too much football.
He snapped because it was almost like leading from the David Price situation where they were suggesting, I guess, lightly suggested that's 2-2 that you've lost now. And then you got Tony coming up at the weekend. And it was a major, like you said, he had his Kevin Keegan. And then yesterday at the press conference, he almost gave an Obama-esque speech. He actually held the crowd as well, which was surprising because they were lively. But I could see something in him where hopefully it's not a situation where he's trying to prove something to everyone else that he's still got it. And in doing that, it could kind of hinder the game plan and it could hinder the strategy that Bellew should
take. But he has to. So I think, you know, there'll be listeners here going, what's the fuss with Dave Caldwell? Dave Caldwell's an okay trainer. I think the issue people have in boxing is he still hasn't taken anyone from zero and made something of them. Yet, he gets all this time on Sky and he gets all these plaudits and he has Spencer Fear on telling the world how intelligent this man is. But you look at McDonald. McDonald was already being trained in Doncaster before Calder got hold of him. Price was elsewhere. Bellew was elsewhere. He's never taken anyone from a kid being 15, 16 and turned them into something. So in boxing, people go, what has Dave Caldwell actually done? And he needs to show us what he can do because right now his scorecard's not looking that great.
So does a third loss, what does that do? For him?
Man, he just turns it into, you know, a second tier Joe Gallagher.
Yeah, I think what you have with Caldwell, I think there's in terms of his coach, I think he at the moment he's coming across to me anyway as more of just a pad, someone who holds pads, or, you know, or I want to see what some sophistication, what do you actually teach the guys? I think there's a bit too much variation in his camp on the train, the guys he trains, because you have McDonald, you have Price, you have Bellew. There's no consistency in styles, footwork, boxing philosophy, kind of the work rate. So what he hasn't got his own stamp or approach to training yet. And that's why he lacks credibility, I think, one of the main reasons as well. You know, how does he teach people? What does he teach them? You don't know. He's got three fighters of the whole range of weights, from bantamweight to super heavyweight or whatever else, all boxing in completely different manners, and when they get really tested, losing. So at the moment, he seems like he's someone that's good at making former relationships with fighters that want to kind of revamp their careers and taking them on under his wing or as part of his camp. But, you know, so maybe he's a persuasive or a good people person. But beyond that, I don't know what he does as a coach.
Yeah. Do you know what I see? Do you know what I see with Dave Caldwell, just to chime in a bit here? And I'll use the football term here, because it just seems like he's a good man manager. It's not tactics the way he seems to struggle. Do you know what I mean? With the boxing tactics. He seems like he can get his fighters' confidence up after they've had for example, Pricey. He got Pricey's confidence up, you know, after those several defeats. Bellew seems very confident and very happy in himself. But tactically, is he astute enough to execute a good game plan to win a big fight? I mean, what would be the strategy here for Bellew to win against Haye?
But he needs to focus. Even look at someone with the potential and the astuteness of Shane McGuigan, whatever else.
Mm.
He's focused, right? He's focused on, you know, the camp might be growing, but you know, there's a marquee fighter and there's a focus in terms of style and approach, right? And we see similarities then when he gets grows. We see similarities in terms of an approach and a style of, hey, you know, guys that, you know, box with a certain style of footwork, you know, Groves and Haye fairly similar in terms of footwork and the way they execute their, you know, their cross, for example. There's obviously a philosophy that they have in terms of their camp and the way they approach the training. To be fair, we should. But what you see there is Shane McGuigan's obviously selected in the people he then takes on. You know, the philosophy that, you know, they have to have a certain grounding or approach to boxing or a certain natural ability to take on his own philosophy, you see.
I get what you mean. The crossover is evident. The crossover is evident. I think whatever happened before with Booth and etc., you need to credit that. But I do agree. There is a core philosophy there and a crossover there, irrespective of being a heavyweight, a bantamweight, a middleweight. You can still see it.
Exactly. This has actually been really interesting. I hope Saturday's events are equally as exciting.
Just a quick one to throw in. Everyone needs to watch the Butane knockout.
I haven't seen it.
Is he officially retired yet?
I don't know, but whoever that guy was that hit him in the head, wow.
I love a Butcher's. When did he fight? Like a Wednesday afternoon or something? That went under the radar.
It was over the weekend. No, everyone slept on that fight, man. He ate that right hand, man.
I didn't sleep in the fight. I was well aware of the fight, but I decided that it wasn't the best use of my time. But nonetheless, I'll go online. I'll check it out. Adrian, is there any news to round up on, or have we covered everything?
Yeah, we've pretty much covered everything. Obviously, Box Media TV, we update the sort of latest news, latest videos, but it's kind of been dominated predominantly by this. There's obviously the fracas between Wilder and Brazil in the foyer. obviously, the Seven Wolves reported that. I saw that on their Instagram. It was quite...
Yeah, those guys get to everything first.
It was okay. It was quite unclear in the video what really went down. You know those fuzzy kind of, I don't know what phone they had, they were recording it off a Nokia, but that seemed interesting. Mixed reports. It's kind of not really worth talking about because Wilder's saying one thing, Brazil saying the other thing. You're never going to get to the bottom of it. So that's that. Obviously you've got Pacquiao Khan as well, which is, I don't know if it's been signed, sealed, delivered, but it seems like it's about 80-90% there. I don't know about that one. I'm sure we'll cover it again at a later stage if it does happen. But what? Just a quick one on you guys' thoughts on that.
From my point of view, I think it's an excellent fight for both of them. I think that Khan wins.
Is it that's WBO, right?
Yeah.
I think Khan wins it. I think Manny's inactivity and, you know, lack of focus on boxing, and Khan, Khan, he's a bit like Audley Harrison. He's not going to go anywhere for a while, so he's going to get his victory. I think he'll get a victory. I can see Khan winning.
Terry?
I can see Khan getting knocked out. let's remember, like, Pacquiao caught Floyd with some decent shots in their fight. So,
what round were these in?
Fourth round. That straight left Pacquiao through.
So when you say some decent shots, one decent shot, there was a flurry.
There was one in the eighth as well.
I did not see a single cross or shot from Pacquiao that stiffened Floyd. I didn't see that.
Watch it again, or I'll send you. Or the Seven Wolves can always send you the clips. Don't worry.
Yeah, when you say stiffened Floyd, you can't pause it and then see Floyd stiffened. Like, that doesn't mean that the shot hurt, right?
But not necessarily that it hurt, but it was a meaningful shot, and you don't see Floyd react that way very often. So, you know, Manny's got that straight left he can land from anywhere. Amir Khan's always susceptible to those left hands, I mean, whichever stance they come from. So, it's always a question. Look, I always say this. Once Khan gets hit, he goes down. If you can avoid getting hit, you can win. But I can't see him avoiding the Pacquiao punches.
Interesting point. So Khan obviously ducked Brook or whatever he did. I don't know what he did with Brook. But where's the tune-up fight?
I think he doesn't waste time with tune-up fights. He wants to make big money.
So did he duck Brook?
Didn't duck Brook. I don't think he cares about Brook. Doesn't want Brook to get paid.
I think it's a business thing, isn't it? He wanted more money. He wanted more than a slice of the pie.
I think I've said on this podcast, that fight will never happen.
Yeah, I agree. I put it like this, man. If we're gonna look at Khan and Pacquiao, and I'll give my quick prediction on that. it's funny what you said to them. I can't get it out of my head. You compared him to Audley Harrison and said he's had a chance of winning. That just seems weird. But it's weird because you can, like, Khan has all the advantages here, the reach, probably the speed and everything else. And Manny hasn't knocked anybody out for, I don't know. For a long time, probably at welterweight for a long time, but you can never back Khan, man. His chin is just, you know. So I don't know. I'm like you, Ed, on this one. Well, I'm gonna be like you as you always are. I'm gonna sit on the fence. I can see a knockout. I can see Khan winning on points. But there'll be a lot of that. but just to lead into kind of Spence Brook now and the whole Khan situation. It reminds me of a throwback situation with Hatton and Junior Witter, you know? Right, you see it? You see the similarity, you know? Like, you got Bradley coming in and beating Witter, and, you know, Spence could be the Bradley role, and, you know, Khan is more like Hatton. He's more the bigger name, more established, didn't want to give Witter the chance, even though Witter was a champion at the time. So I think we could. I hope we don't, because I want to see them fight. But I think we could have
a repeat. Well, I think they're different, because Witter was never... If you look at Brook, really... Whoever you are, if you're an American, Brook is your number one or number two welterweight. If you're British, Brook is your number one or your number two welterweight. There's no debating that. Like, Brook is up there. With Witter, it was like, maybe he's top 10. He got a lucky world title. And he won his world title when no one really took the WBO seriously as well. Whereas Brook is a legit welter. Khan is a legit welter. It's not really a British dust-up. This is a fight for 147... you know, status. And it should happen, but there's so much personal animosity between the two camps that I don't see it happening.
Guys, I have a feeling that we'll have a number of conversations about this in the coming weeks. But very, very interesting. I think we all look forward to March the 4th. Be a great night of boxing. Adrian, is that all from you?
Yeah, so from just tomorrow, I'm gonna make my way down to the O2 and check out the open workout. So that should be interesting. Maybe see some Liverpool fans, some Liverpool girls.
be sure to check out any footage from that on boxmediatv.com.
Yeah, hopefully I'll see the Seven Wolves down there at some stage. I might go down there Thursdays or the press conference, so I'll try and see what
I can. I have a feeling the Wolves might be feeding around that time.
Okay. I'll bring some bread.
That's gentle. Box Media Talks, Box Media TV. Until next time, guys, keep your guards up.